This is SB Nation Radio.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
A new generation of sports radio.
This is the Tony D Show.
Now it's time to see who has the heart.
This is our countdown to kickoff featuring the Chicago Bears. Live from the Quicken Loans Studios in New Jersey, here's Tony Desiri.
Glad to be with us here on SB Nation Radio as we keep cruising along in our countdown to kickoff segments. Chicago Bears, 6-10 last season. Jay Cutler. Oh, Jay Cutler. I gotta tell you, I remember being in Denver when Cutler was drafted. And the cool thing about the day Cutler was drafted is that it came after the season in which the Denver Broncos had won, had gone to the AFC Championship game against the Steelers. And Jake Plummer in that game had like four turnovers. And Mike Shanahan had an opportunity to get the quarterback of the future, and he chose Vanderbilt's Jay Cutler. And it was interesting because having, you know, I knew the SEC, I have a team in the SEC, so I knew Cutler had kind of changed the image of Vanderbilt a little bit, but I also had known that Vanderbilt didn't win under Jay Cutler. They didn't have a winning season. They didn't win a bowl game. They just were markedly improved. That was the Vanderbilt Commodores with Cutler, and he could throw the ball like the wind, and there was this genuine excitement that this kid with this rocket arm was going to come in, and he was Mike Shanahan and them were going to form this partnership, and then they were going to take over, and Cutler was going to be the quarterback of the future. We have been waiting for Jay Cutler to really have one of those kind of breakout seasons pretty much his whole year, is the whole time he's been in the league. So with Jay Cutler, I've come to the realization that you get what you get with him. And there's really no reason to expect more. There's no real reason to think that it's going to be massively different this year under this guy or that guy. Add a coach here, take a coach away. Whatever the circumstances that you put around him, you get what you get. You get games in which he's brilliant. You get games where you see skill. You get games where you're going to see him do the things that people said, yeah, that's the reason I liked him. That's the reason I thought he was going to make it in this league. And then you're going to get games where you're going to shake your head. There's just going to be that. That's him. That's him in a nutshell. It's too late to change. It's not going to be any different. But that doesn't mean they can't be successful. So we'll talk about the Bears throughout the show today. We got a lot to get to with the NFL. The preseason games are coming up in week two. You're going to see a little bit more of the starters in these games. But I got to start with Ryan Lochte, who now we found out that the story of being robbed at gunpoint in Rio is a fabrication. And I'm massively disappointed in this. It's not that I'm bothered by it. It's not that it angers me. It's that I want Ryan Lochte to be remembered as a great swimmer. And I don't think that's going to happen. I think this is something that carries with him for a while. This is the equivalent of faking a stroke at a party. When the ambulance comes, it's too late. Right? We've all told some whoppers in our lives. We've all told lies to get out of trouble. We've all told lies to impress people. We've all told lies just because we didn't want to get into details. But this one was gigantic. And the sad thing for me is that he had to know, given who he is, it would have been gigantic. But you know what's troubling the most about this story? It isn't that Ryan Lochte lied to the police, or he lied to his coaches, or he lied to the media. All of that, you could figure out why he would do that in any circumstance. This story broke because he lied to his mother. And that bothers me. You don't need to drag mom into this. You don't need to lie to your mother. You're not 10. You're not trying to get out of punishment. You're not trying to get out of being grounded. You told your mother you were robbed at gunpoint. She was the one that told everybody else. And now this is becoming a massive incident. And to be honest with you, no one got hurt here. Some reputations were ruined. Yeah, it's a lie. Yeah, they were being goofy. They were urinating on a wall. They were acting up. They were being frat boys. All of those things. Nobody got hurt. Nobody got injured. It wasn't a hit and run or something like that. They didn't commit a massive crime that they were trying to cover up. They were just acting ridiculous and then made this story up. But Lochte telling his mother this, and then that becomes the catalyst for which this story comes to fruition, is the saddest part of this whole thing. Look, it's one thing if NBC comes up to you and says, what happened, and we're hearing stories of this. And you say, well, we were robbed. Okay. Or if your coaches say, why were you guys out till 6 o'clock in the morning? And you say, wow, we were robbed. All right. If the Olympic Committee wants to know something and you go, we were robbed. All right. But when you're on the phone with your mother, you're like, hey, Ma, guess what? Yeah, I was robbed at gunpoint. Yeah, they made me get on the ground. And I said, no, I'm not getting on the ground. And then he pointed the gun at my head. He cocked the pistol, pointed at my head. And I said, whatever. And I got on the ground. Ugh, that makes me sick. Look, I remember when I was in high school, I worked at this restaurant. And I was really good friends with the prettiest girl in our school. I mean, she was gorgeous. Out of my league by a mile, 100 miles. And I remember I was tutoring her in academics, you know, history and math and all that stuff. Anyway, I was working at this restaurant, and she came into the restaurant to see me. And we got to talking, and we were laughing, and I waited on her and whatnot. And my buddies at the restaurant wanted to know who she was because she was really gorgeous. And I don't know why I said this, but I said she was my girlfriend. Which, if you knew me back then, you would know immediately that I was lying. Because that was not somebody I could date back then. Anyway, long story short, months later, I'm in France on an exchange trip. And I find out she went to work at the restaurant I was working at with all my friends. And so naturally, the immediate conversation is, aren't you dating Tony? To which her response was, of course I'm not. And so I had to answer for that. That was just a lie to impress people. That was a lie of an insecure kid just lying to lie. But here's the difference when you tell a major whopper. I just had to answer for it to my buddies and her. I had to apologize to her. She had a boyfriend. He lied to his mother and then the world. And this is the other thing. He thought it was believable because for months and months and months, we've been hearing nothing but bad things from Rio. See, when I told my lie, it was immediately unbelievable. When I told my buddies that that really gorgeous model-looking blonde was my girlfriend, my friends should immediately have said, that's not even close to true. We just out of common sense, that doesn't fit. But Ryan Lochte lied about a situation we've all been primed to accept as real. Ryan Lochte lied about a crime that we believed absolutely could have happened in a place like Rio, because for months and months and months, the groundwork was laid for, this is a crime-ridden city. There is massive corruption. Police aren't even looking at crimes. So when Ryan Lochte said he was robbed at gunpoint and the swimmers were robbed at gunpoint, this was believable. And not only was it believable, when there was an element of it was a cop that did this, it was even more believable. Of course, Rio is ripping with crime. Why wouldn't we believe that a U.S. swimmer got robbed? My God, we've been waiting for that story to come out since the start of the Olympic Games. So naturally, the foundation of, yeah, this is believable. Of course it's believable. Why wouldn't it be believable? As a matter of fact, I've been waiting every day for the, here it is, Rio really stinks as an Olympic city. Here is the thing you've been waiting for. All of the pollution, all of the disease, all of the corruption, all of the crime, it's finally showed up in these Olympic Games that have been absolutely flawless in their presentation. My God, I want to go to Rio. I'm blown away. No, people didn't want to go to Rio. I've been seeing images of this city every single day thinking, oh, I'd love to go there. But I know better because months and months and months I've been told where this city actually is. Ryan Lochte preyed upon the vulnerability of the city to protect its own reputation. And he lied to his mother. Lied to his mother. Man, he's one of the better swimmers of all time, but he lied to mom. All right, we'll talk NFL next. I am Tony D. This is SB Nation Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
Glad you can be with us here on SB Nation Radio. Our telephone number, 800-777-2907. Later, we'll be breaking down the Chicago Bears in our countdown to kickoff preview. A team a day all the way to the start of the season. Vinny Iyer is going to join us from Sporting News. We're going to talk NFL with him because I don't know what I would do if I was one of the four players that was asked to come talk to the commissioner. Mike Neal, James Harrison, Julius Peppers, Clay Matthews. I don't know what I would do if I was one of those players. I know we talked about it earlier this week, but just to kind of refresh, the Al Jazeera report, where later had been recanted, the NFL wants to get to the bottom of that, and so they need the cooperation of these four players, so they're asking them to come in and talk about it, and the players are trying to figure out if that's the right thing to do. And you may say, well, yeah, of course it would be. Why wouldn't it be? Well, it is a power grab here by the NFL that they have, that Tom Brady tried to fight, and the NFL does have the right to discipline the way they see it, but the union is trying to figure out whether or not this is going to open a Pandora's box when it comes to the way the NFL investigates players, looks into allegations, and utilizes its punishment aspect, and whether or not that is fair based on the collective bargaining agreement. And it's, I know it's touchy, and sometimes language, there's a blurring of the language in deals where, oh, it really meant to do this. Like, the spirit of the clause is this, but the line is blurred enough that it sort of overextends. And I think that's where the union is. I don't know what I would do, to be honest with you, if I was one of these four players. I really don't. I find it interesting because if you make this stand, let's say you're Clay Matthews and you say, you know what, I'm not going in no matter what. You may not have a legal foot to stand on here. You may lose out on a season. You may lose out on a number of games. You might lose your income. And you'll be making a stand in which maybe there's progress or maybe there isn't. Because the NFL, again, as a private entity, we're dealing with contracted employees in a private entity. And so there really isn't anything lost if Clay Matthews sits out for the public good, right? Like if police officers went on strike, if the police officers in their union said, look, with the city, for example, made a big statement and said, no, we don't, this is far reaching and we're going to stand up to this. If you're the city, you would want very badly to resolve that. You need the police. Any sort of public entity that does that, you need those people. In this case, the NFL could take James Harrison off the board, and that's it. No worries. Go figure it out yourself. We're moving along here. The Steelers are going to still play games. They're just going to play games without you, but we're not going to see people turning in their season tickets. We're not going to see sponsors leaving. We're not going to see television ratings plummet. Sorry, but this machine moves on without you. And the greater good that they're fighting, which I support, I don't know if legally or in legal in the context of the contract between the labor and union, not legally like court of law, I don't know if they actually have anything to stand on. So I don't know what I would do. The principle seems sound. You can't let the NFL just willy-nilly call players in and they're unprotected based on accusations and their livelihood can be thwarted by any means necessary. See, here's what the union wants to fight, okay? The some players are openly vocal about things, okay? And they're critical about stuff, and they make statements about the league, or they say things publicly about the league, and they become a thorn in the side of the league, okay? So what the union is trying to say is, look, we want to protect our players from your retribution when some of our players who are outspoken and speak their mind when you want to get back at them. So the union looks at this and says, okay, Al Jazeera and Charlie Sly makes a statement to Al Jazeera, and he names these players. Later recants it, but nevertheless, the accusation is out there. The league, under the umbrella of, we have to look into everything. You don't understand, we have to look into everything. We don't want the public to think all our players are roided up, man. So we're going to use our power to go out and fight this, and we have to make sure we clear everybody's name. After all, don't you want us to clear your name? Okay, sounds noble. But the union is always looking at the flip side of everything. All right, yeah, sure, you bring four guys in. Let's say it takes 2 hours. Let's say all four guys walk into the room. And then they come out and go, oh, that was great. That was painless and was great. And the NFL says, we have nothing to base these accusations on. These accusations were, again, later recanted, rightfully so recanted. After our investigation, these four guys have done nothing wrong. Everybody wins, right? The players win. The league wins. Everybody's happy. The game is clean, et cetera, et cetera. The union doesn't look at it that way. The union says, okay, but what if I have a player like Richard Sherman, for example, who likes to speak his mind, and he speaks his mind too much, and he's just becoming a nuisance, and somebody in San Diego makes an accusation on Richard Sherman, and you feel like you gotta bring him down, so you bring him in for questioning. We don't know what questions you're going to ask. We don't know what direction your investigation is going to go. You're talking about a man's livelihood because somebody in on a radio station in San Diego makes an accusation. I'm just looking at the larger picture here, NFL. That's the union stance, and that's why the union is what it is. How many times have we done these kind of stories where people go, yeah, I don't understand what the union's big beef about this is. This seems pretty cut and dry. Yeah, it's cut and dry because that may be the case, but they never look at individual situations as cut and dry. They're always looking at the larger picture. What does this mean? What have we given up for this? Sure, the guys go into the NFL office, they come back squeaky clean, and the story is over. What does this mean for the future? Does that mean every accusation gets looked at? Does everybody get suspended based on a simple accusation? What about collecting cell phones? What about taking people's, you know, pictures off phones or information off phones? Where does the power stop? How much grab do they get to get? That's what the union's job is. I don't know what I would do here. I'd want to play. I don't know if this is my fight for the union if I'm Clay Matthews. Because again, imagine a city dealing with a contract with the police. And I keep using this example because I'm trying to think of something where it affects the public. You know, garbage strikes, for example, are always problematic in big cities. When the waste management union goes on strike and garbage isn't collected, there's a public outcry for this. Like, get this fixed, city. Get this fixed, union. Would anybody boycott the NFL because Mike Neal is suspended? Would anybody boycott the NFL because James Harrison was suspended? The Packers, fans would lose it. Two linebackers are suspended for something they probably didn't do. But at the same time, are any one of those four guys willing to say, I will stand, I will risk my career, I will risk my paycheck to stand against this, even though Tom Brady ran through the court system and he didn't get anywhere? Tom Brady, if he had accepted the 4-game suspension immediately, got the same result as it when he prolonged it for 18 months through the courts. Brady got suspended 4 games. He's sitting 4 games. And in that process, took us through all sorts of levels of the judicial system. You think Clay Matthews has a chance, or James Harrison has a chance? I don't know what I would do. Vinny Iyer, we'll talk to him about this next. I'm Tony D. It's SB Nation Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony Desiree.
Vinny Iyer is going to join us from Sporting News. We'll talk about this latest NFL situation, those four players being asked to come into the commissioner's office to talk about an Al Jazeera report. I'm on the player's side on this, but I absolutely understand if you're the league, you do not show any sort of lack. If you have the opportunity to expand your power, you do it. It's just the way it goes, and especially in negotiations, the way it goes. I think it's kind of deplorable. I hate the fact that the suspensions are coming by based on conduct detrimental. So I think that blurs the spirit of that rule. Conduct detrimental isn't, we want to talk to you and you don't want to talk to us unprotected. That's stupid. But again, when you're talking about union versus management and the power struggle that occurs in all walks of life, anytime you can gain an edge, you gain an edge. And the league's case, they got an edge when Tom Brady's court drama basically resulted in the original suspension. The NFL ended up winning. They fought it and they won. So they get to now have the expansive power grab that they're getting now in this situation. But again, I told you earlier this week that this becomes the slippery slope that's problematic in this story. Do they investigate every single accusation? And do you, as a player, have to go in every time somebody says, oh, I supplied so-and-so with this drug? Oh, I have knowledge that so-and-so has a relationship with this guy. They have to look into everything? Even if there's no evidence? Everything? I mean, the performance-enhancing drug issue for this league should be we test. And when the tests are confirmed, then we talk and we investigate, we look into, we find out what caused this test to be positive. We get your side of it. We tell you our side of it. And we come down with the punishment. Now it is, if there's an accusation, you have to talk to us. And if you don't talk to us, then you're suspended. Vinny Iyer, Sporting News, joining us here on SB Nation Radio. How are you, Vinny?
Good. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, so in this story, these four players, do they have any leg to stand on here when it comes to not wanting to cooperate?
Well, now everyone can see why the NFL wanted to go down the line with Tom Brady, all the way down the line, to say, even if it's about deflated footballs, we're going to win this battle, and you guys better comply with anything we're going to bring up as a potential investigation, or we can do this to you, that we will eventually win, we will out legal you, and it's going to go down this road. So this is exactly why they did that, and everyone's saying it was a kind of a petty argument. But now you see the players feeling helpless in a much more serious accusation of PEDs.
The idea that if you don't cooperate with an investigation is conduct detrimental to the league, that seems blurring the line. Is it blurring the line?
Oh, it's really has crossed the line at this point. So when you look at the NFL and the way they operate, the investigation process is already shady. That's why the interview process is something that James Harrison and the other players don't want to be involved in. If they make a statement the way that Harrison has with the affidavit or says he wants to do it on his terms, they should agree to that. It shouldn't always be their way. And it just doesn't seem right to dispense justice in that way with a lot of question marks.
Vinny, how did we get to this point? Because I hear Aaron Rodgers saying, hey, look, this is our fault. How did the CBA get to a point where this kind of situation, where players have to go in unprotected based on accusations, how did that come to fruition?
Well, I think there's just a lot of scare tactics built in the CBA. And when we have a lockout, it's like, okay, if you guys don't play, you're not getting paid, that's it. And it's going to hurt guys that are making millions, yeah, some of the superstars are, but some of the other people are grinding out hundreds of thousands trying to get jobs and stick in the NFL. So it's hard when the guys have the upper hand. It's really just like any other corporate environment where billionaires are saying, okay, you better go back to work for us or no one's going to get paid. At the end, the people that are less financially flexible are the ones that have to cave in.
You know, in other situations where you talk about like public employees, like garbage collectors or police officers, if they stand for their union rights, the public gets involved and says, hey, we need police. We need people to pick up the garbage. We need firemen. In this case, the public isn't going to turn away from the NFL. But do they understand the players' side here? Do you feel that they get it, that the players might be in a bad position?
I don't think they completely get it, because then if you go down to our level and the fans, the Joe average Joe going to these games, then we're looking at, oh, these millionaires are complaining about not getting what they need. So it's always a different level of sympathy with the police and firemen. They do a lot of hard jobs that in our community that we always want to support them a little bit more, and that's just the way it is. We just don't look at the professional celebrity athletes in the same way.
I'm trying not to make it a larger thing here, but that absolute power corrupts absolutely. Is there a chance in the new CBA that the players get some of this back, some of these protections back, or does the NFL say, no, we got a taste of this, and this is the way it's going to be forever?
Well, I think they have to take a hard stand. It's going to be very difficult. They need kind of all the players to get on this, not just a few reps and a few dissenters. They need to make this a complete shutdown to say, hey, you're not going to have a product. We are your product. You better make some changes or it's going to go away. And I think it's going to take a lot of courage and determination by all the players in this league, led by the richest ones, to make this happen.
All right, I'm going to use just one of the players as an example. Let's say Clay Matthews says, look, I'm going to fight this. I'm going to get a lawyer, and I'm going to do what Tom Brady did. Does he have time to sort of circumvent a suspension with an appeal? I don't know the legal process here, but can he play while this is being under-reviewed, like what Brady did?
Yeah, he definitely can, but then it's like, how long are you going to do this? It requires you to expend some time, energy, and money to get involved in this when – if you just go and maybe do the report and just say you didn't do it, maybe you'll have a different outcome. But I think with the NFL, it's just so shady where even if you may say you're coming clean and give them the right answers and what you feel like are the right answers, that they can go and stab you in the back. And that's the distrust that's developed between the players and the owners of the NFL.
Does the NFL now set itself up in this situation for them to say, okay, we now have to look into every accusation that is ever made of any player? If we're going to put all this time and effort into a story that's been recanted, when a radio host in San Diego makes an accusation, we got to look into that too. Do they set themselves up for that?
Yeah, they do. I mean, you don't know what their basis of investigation is. It's like you have to have some probable cause to do this in the legal system. And now it's just a hearsay and rumor and maybe bad reporting, and that's not the way you should be conducting this. The NFL, if they're going to do this, they should have come up with something with their own independent investigation before reacting to another investigation.
Vinny, I got 60 seconds. How do you think this plays out? Do you think in the end they'll go talk it, or are we going to be talking about this story for a while?
Well, I think the players are going to have to cave in here by the deadline and take care of it, because I think that's the only way they can get out of it and play. So hopefully we won't be talking about it for too long. They'll make their statements, comply with the NFL, and everything will be good, and they'll have closure on this pretty quickly.
Vinny Iyer, Sporting News on the NFL. Really appreciate your time on this. Thanks for straightening us out. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
You got it. Vinny Iyer. Well, it's interesting. I think he's right. In the end, you can make these grandiose stands. You can go to the public. You can say, we're going to fight this. The reality is suspensions are coming. The power is in the NFL. They can suspend. And you're going to have to sit out if you're these guys making sense. And then do they really, 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 really want to do this? That's the million-dollar question. Do they really want to do this? If you're James Harrison and you're on the tail end of your career, is this how you want to close it out? Every second you're not on the field is a second closer to when nobody wants you on the field, where you're too old. You're not giving up your prime youth here. It's not like you're looking down the line and seeing a 10-year career that you can still have. Make the stand today, benefit for it for the next decade. James Harrison is getting close. All these guys are getting close to the end of their careers. Is this how they want it to end, making these big union stands, or do they want to play? All of the work that they put into the offseason, everything that they've done to get ready for the start of the season and help their team win, one last shot at going to that next level, winning a Super Bowl or wherever their team goal is. And I think for the Steelers and Packers, it's to win a Super Bowl. Do you want to be a part of that, or do you want to make a union stand? That's the real dilemma. And it's fascinating. All right, coming up next, John Elway says, it's A-OK. Trust me, it's A-OK. Is he right? I'll have that for you next. I'm Tony D. It's SB Nation Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
right, thanks for joining us. It's Tony D here on SB Nation Radio. We are previewing the Chicago Bears. This is Adam's team, by the way. So this is a special day for Adam, who produces this program. His 6-10 Chicago Bears have lost Adam Gase. The defense, though, got better. Defense, they went out and spent some money. They went out and get some guys. I don't know.
And the big thing for me is everywhere John Fox has gone, that second year has been the leap year.
That's true. So that's a very good point. That is very true.
And it's another season for Vic Fangio to put in his defense and switch him from a 4-3 Tampa 2 team that they basically ran with Lovey and Mark Trestman to the 3-4 team that he's built now, and it's a lot better, and they've added pieces. So I'm optimistic with this team. I don't know. They're right on that edge for me of getting into the playoffs, just missing the playoffs.
I'm with you there. We'll get our predictions coming up in hour number two. We'll also talk to Lester Wiltfong of Windy City Gridiron from SB Nation. We'll talk to him about the Bears. Alshon Jeffrey, man. I love Alshon Jeffrey. I love the fact that he went and made something of himself after Lane Kiffin told him he would be pumping gas if he went to South Carolina.
Yep.
The famous recruiting story of Lane Kiffin at Tennessee telling Alshon Jeffrey, if you go to South Carolina, you'll be pumping gas.
That's the one good thing that Brandon Marshall did for the Bears, was he got a hold of Alshon Jeffrey. He got him to Florida to his training facility, and he made him work out with him every single day after he was drafted, and he got him into shape.
I'm glad Brandon Marshall did something good for the Bears.
That's it. I mean, he had a decent first season, but I mean, after that, you know, he just decided that it was time to start causing problems, which we know that's what he'll do in New York this year.
I do have to say, I got a pet peeve that happened to me today that I've got to get off my chest. Every now and then I go, it's 2016. Why are we still doing this? And today I took my daughter to lunch. And I said, hey, I'm going to take you to lunch. I said, I have to get my car washed. My wife has said time and time again, your car is a pigsty. My car is a disaster. It's just gross. So I told my daughter, I said, look, we're going to go out to lunch, then we're going to go wash the car. And we have this car wash place where you drive through and you wash the car, but then you have to pay, like, you have to put quarters in to get the vacuum going. So I brought a couple of dollar bills and I go to the car wash and I pay for the car wash and the car is scrubby clean now. And I go to the vacuum place and I have to go to the change machine. So I take the dollar bills out and I go into the change machine. Is there anything more annoying than sticking a dollar bill in something, whether it's a vending machine or a change machine, and having it spit it right back out at you?
Drives me insane.
Time and time again, you keep putting it in, it spits it out, put it in, spits it out. You take the corners of the dollar, you spread them out, you try to get a nice crisp feel so that it will read the dollar. You send it back in, it spits it back out, send it back in. Finally, the guy, the worker at the thing said, man, just come to the cash register, I'll give you quarters. So I didn't have to buy an air freshener or the other little gadgets that they sell at the car wash. He just gave me a bunch of quarters for the thing. And I'm thinking, it's 2016. Can we not make a machines that do this now? I've had this problem for 25 years.
Did you do the thing where you take the dollar and straighten it out and go over the corner of the machine?
Yes, that's
and
right.
Try and flatten it.
Try to flatten it, make it look sharp.
You know what it reminds me of?
That extra look. It's awful.
Is like the old Nintendo when you had to like blow into the cassette player or blow into the machine and that magically helped. Or you just kind of pound on the top of it and it would work all of a sudden. That's what it reminds me of. But now it's 2016.
Can we not do this? Like vending machines, right? I used to have a vending machine at my last radio station that was notorious for this. It made you, and I'm a big guy. Sometimes I want a midday snack. So now if I walk by the vending machine and I see a bag of chips or something that I want, I used to have to have a second guess. Like, you know, that's not this the dollar machine doesn't. It's not going to work. I'm going to stick it in there. It's just not going to. It's not going to accept the dollar bill. Come on. I am walking around the world with a computer in my pocket.
Right.
You know me in technology, right? Remember when I told you the story about how I took the train into New York and my tickets were on the phone and I was freaking out? My wife said, no, your train tickets are on your phone. Don't worry about it. You don't need to print them out. I said, no, I need to print them out. No. She goes, no. Come here, let me show you. And then she went to my phone. She's like, here's your train tickets. Just show the conductor these tickets on your phone. You idiot. It's going to work. Well, I got to the train, and my phone froze, and I couldn't get the tickets, and I thought they were going to throw me off the train. because I couldn't get it to work. I had this fear that these things, these technological things, don't work. The other day, my wife said, hey, deposit your, well, I got a birthday check. And she said, deposit it using your phone. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. She said, simple. You take a picture of the front, you take a picture of the back, it deposits it right into your account. Okay. All right. So we now live in this technological world. Yet I'm sticking a dollar bill in and it can't read it? For the love of Pete, come on. This should be instant. There should be a flawless mechanism that says, oh my God, you could give me a crumpled up 1972 dollar bill and I'll figure it out that it's a dollar and give you four quarters for it. Yeah, there's my rant for you. All right, coming up in the next hour, John Elway says we're okay at the quarterback position. I love John Elway to death. I absolutely love John Elway. But I don't know if he's right. I want to believe he's right. John Elway, when he took over the Denver Broncos, I was so skeptical because I know how former player turned front office guy usually works out. Sometimes it does, and then sometimes that competitive nature or the things that made me great or the things that made me successful, I don't see the forest from the trees. And so I get bogged down in the details and I don't like it. I just want to do what I do best. So I was really nervous when the Broncos decided that John Elway was going to be handling general manager duties, vice president of football operations duties for the Broncos. But it has worked out tremendously. But not everything is a home run. And he's trying to hit one here. And he's trying to hit one here with a broken bat against a pitcher who can throw 140 miles an hour. I don't know if this one's going to work out for John. We'll talk about that coming up in the next hour. Again, our Chicago Bears preview. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. Lester Wiltfong from Windy City Gridiron next hour.